Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 24 for May 4th, 2007, and hilarity ensued. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Engage, an enhanced start menu replacement that gives you fast and easy access to all your most used items. Download your free trial at thebestwaytostart.com. Time to shed some light, to throw open the windows and take a look at Windows Vista with our friend Paul Thurrott from the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com, and of course, news editor for Windows IT Pro. Hey, Paul!
What's that?
Huh? Sorry. If the intro gets long enough, maybe you'll pass out during it, actually.
I was dozing off there.
Oh, well, I forgot. As long as we're plugging the author of the great new Vista Secrets, available from Wiley & Sons. Now you can say hello.
Hi. I was looking outside. It was sunny and warm and stuff.
And you're wondering why you're indoors doing a podcast. It's like school, isn't it? What am I doing here in school?
It is a little bit like school, yes.
It is, but it's not really.
I always learn something.
Because unlike school, you could actually get paid to do this if somebody would ever buy advertising.
There you go.
Actually, they did. Engage did. And I'll talk about them in a second. I've got a coupon code for them now, which is something new. So that's really cool. But before we go anywhere, let's just run down the subjects we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. Paul has a grammar correction and an apology to all the Latin scholars in the audience. We're going to talk about his experiences with his high-def DVD player from the Xbox and getting it to work on a PC, Microsoft's Silverlight, Windows upgrade, the profits, Microsoft, what that really means in real dollars. We'll also talk about the Dell decision to ship Ubuntu and IE8, missing in action. IE8 MIA, how about that for a headline?
There you go.
Before we begin, though, I do want to tell you we've got a new coupon code, ENGAGE. I've mentioned it before. It's the best way to start. In fact, you can get your copy at thebestwaytostart.com. It's a start menu, start button replacement for Windows Vista and XP. Gives XP a lot of the neat features of Vista, you know, where you type the first couple of letters of the item and it will launch. So instead of, for instance, you know, clicking start, program, accessories, calculator, you just go start, C-A-L, hit return, calculator launches. It declutters your start menu, too, automatically organizing it into folders. Big icons, that's optional, but I like them because it makes it very easy. And they've got great new icons for all the programs, too. Also, you can use searches with those quick little keystrokes. No need to type HTTP, www, not even .com. Once you've gone to a site, you just type a few letters, you get right back to it. I have a feeling you're going to love it. I want you to try it for 30 days by going to thebestwaytostart.com. And by the way, I mean, it's only $19.95, but they do have a family license for if you want to get it for all up to five computers in your house. That's $29.95. The friends and family license is up to 15 computers, one for you, two to give your friends or family. That's $49.95. I think that's kind of neat. And there's a small business pack, too. But you use the TWiT coupon code, you'll get 20% off any of the above. That's 20% off with the coupon code TWiT, offer good through May 31st. The best way to start. .com. Try it free for 30 days. I think you will love it, and I know you won't want to be without it ever again. Now, let's talk about, first of all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think you said et cetera.
I bet I did.
You think you did?
I do. Right. I'm lazy, you know, when it comes to that kind of thing. So,
but you now did you you went to the fine schools of Massachusetts?
The fine public schools of Massachusetts.
You must have studied Latin, doesn't everybody?
No, I did not.
No Latin. So you,
I'm
but
lucky
you
we,
know.
Studied, we studied English. I mean, it's,
English would be good.
English would be a start. Here. Anyway, I do agree that the term is et cetera.
You got an email.
I did.
From a grammarian. You know what I found? Whenever I get emails with grammar or spelling corrections, there almost invariably is a grammar or spelling error in that email.
Oh, jeez. This is maybe... I don't know that this is the first one I've gotten from the podcast, but I get this stuff regularly from my website, and I actually have to say that stuff is always appreciated. So
we want to get it right.
whether it's correct or not, any of those corrections. I think that, you know, some people may take that kind of thing the wrong way, but I can't say that I enjoy it, but I do appreciate it.
It's E-T space C-E-T-R-A, Latin for and so forth or and yes. Others.
So, for the record, it is et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There, I said it thrice.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in the words of the King of Siam.
So, I'm sure I'll screw that one up again. I probably today, knowing me. So, sorry.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You will not screw it up again.
I will. I'm terrible.
You will not. So, good. That's good. We encourage any grammarians who want. Do you ever listen? There's a really good podcast called Grammar Girl.
No, I was actually thinking of NPR for some reason when you just said that, and the sort of hit or miss nature of what NPR can be.
Right.
But I would imagine that is also.
Grammar Girl must feel such pressure not to make a mistake.
Right. It's like being Miss Manners and you wig out in a restaurant and someone catches you. You know?
Or Michael Dell and you get caught using Ubuntu.
Exactly.
They're going to be. They announced a few weeks ago they were going to use Linux. And now they said which Linux?
Yes. And I'm not sure that there aren't going to be others, but they did agree that Ubuntu will be the one, at least for now. And they said that 80% of the people who were asking for Linux asked for Ubuntu.
Ubuntu is very popular. Feisty Farm, yeah. The new one, is reputedly even better. I haven't tried it yet. I'm still back with Misty Mole or whatever it was.
I actually, you know, like a fool, downloaded that thing the first day. Actually, it was the day before it was going to come out officially. A few weeks back on a Thursday, and I have yet to install it because, you know, it doesn't really work well in virtual PC. And then this particular version, the workaround, I couldn't get that to work. So I've been installing.
I didn't know it didn't work in virtual PC. That's interesting.
Well, not by default. Yeah, you have. There's actually a hack you can do to make it work, but they do work fine in VMware, and I need to get that going. So
cool.
I will do that. But anyway, as we've discussed, I don't think you know, Linux on the desktop is going to set the world on fire.
It's a consumer. They've been offering it in business for a while, but this is the consumer desktops too.
Yeah, and to be clear, it's select consumer PCs, and it's in the U.S. only.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's not as wide reaching as we are now offering Ubuntu everywhere. I mean, it's
now here's a question: is it $90 cheaper if you don't buy Windows? Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of those kind of questions, so I guess we're going to see, because I went and looked, and currently, Canonical, which is the company that you know, makes Ubuntu for all intents and purposes, or puts it together or whatever. They actually charge businesses $250 a year per PC for support during business hours, or $900 a year for 24/7 support. Now, obviously, they're not going to do that for Dell or charge that much for Dell consumer customers. But Dell did note that consumers in the U.S. who do buy an Ubuntu-based computer can optionally purchase support from Canonical, and without saying how much that's going to cost. So just by comparison, I also looked this up, and on a typical Dell Dimension desktop, the first year of support when you get a Windows-based machine is free, and an additional year of support is about $90.
So I think it's actually a good thing to unbundle the cost of support, because for one thing, there's intense pressure to reduce the costs of all gadgets. And one way companies have done this is by reducing the quality of their support, you know.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. So unbundle it, for crying out loud. You know, say, look, this is what support costs. You want it? Pay for it. You don't want it? Okay. But understand that people don't understand support is very expensive, isn't it, for these companies to provide?
Support is like healthcare. Yeah. Of course it's expensive. You know, you don't understand how much you're really – you know, paying for things, because on the back end, there's all these costs at the end of life. And so is it with PCs, Leo, I guess.
Yeah. The end of life of PCs or humans. Sure. Right. No, and I
recycling
think that people
costs are astronomical.
I talk to people on the radio show, particularly where it's a little bit less sophisticated, more general audience. Mm-hmm. And we all take for granted how cheap. Well, we don't, because we've been around a while. We know how expensive computers used to be, but computers are so cheap now. And people had the same expectations for support they had when they cost twice as much. And they don't understand. That's why it's cheaper.
Right. You don't understand the expense of something until you actually have to pay for it. And in the case of support,
It's like 40 or 50 bucks a call. I mean, it's
not to mention the fact that you're getting pretty low quality support. You get that guy who you know is walking through some flow chart and he actually has no idea what he's talking about.
He's got a notebook.
Yeah,
that's it.
That drives me crazy. I had to do that with the Xbox 360 when I had problems there. They had to, you know, go through their entire process, and I kept saying, "Look, I'm just going to send it back. Could we just jump ahead to that step?" And nope, we got to go. Could you turn it off and unplug it?
They won't let you do it. They won't. Okay. Same thing with Dell. You have to do the system recovery disk before can. Before they'll say, no, apparently it has died.
Yes. Oh, no. Yeah. 20 hours later, it turns out you were correct.
Oh, it is dead. I really would love to see that as well. They do that. There's Dell Gold support. I mean, you can pay for better support.
Oh, right. Dell actually has some pretty comprehensive support options. You know, they have a PC care support, or actually a variety of PC care support packages at varying costs.
And, to their credit, they do promote those. They do say, you know, you might want to get this and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So this is my new cause. Unbundle the price of support. Let us know what it's going to cost. So what are you doing with your... Last week, last week, you may remember, Paul had taken his HD DVD player from his Xbox 360 and connected it.
It's like I'm a scientist. You know, I said, hey, this plug looks like it would plug into my PC. I wonder what will happen if I do that.
More like a monkey. And so he plugged in the USB.
I get electrocuted, and then I try it again, and I get electrocuted again. It's more like Homer Simpson.
Really. I hear the 2001 theme rising. The dawn of man. So, but it makes sense. You got it to it, and it would be good news because it's only $200 for this HD DVD player. You plugged it into your PC. It saw it.
Yes, it did.
Did it install drivers?
I can't speak to XP, but in Vista, it downloads all the drivers that you need. It gets one of them from Windows Update, and then it works. And it works in the sense that you can access it like a drive. It doesn't work in the sense that you can play movies with it, which obviously is the point of the device. So I spent the last week trying to get it to play movies. And as we say, hilarity ensued. Stupidly, I did this
What's
on
that
my...
from? You said that last week, too.
I say that all the time.
No, but it's from something.
It's from my ensued. Life story. It's the...
It's some movie or play or something. Hilarity ensued. Maybe it is you.
It's me.
It's you. Okay. Hilarity ensuing.
No, sure. It's all over the place.
Somebody will send me an email.
There you go.
Somebody will send me an email. Hilarity ensued. What is that from? Anyway,
so
what are the steps?
You did
I don't want to spoiler.
Well, the step
a spoiler. No, you did get it working
eventually.
But what did it take?
Oh God. So, well, first I
were there
obviously
any chicken
need
bones
a,
or you know
yeah right. This, okay. Well, eventually there are sure.
Yeah.
You need a player that's compatible with HD DVD format. Some software. You
know, software, Windows Media Player. WinDVD or Power Cyber DVD. Yeah, okay.
Now, I actually have Power DVD Ultra, the latest version, and I looked at it, and sure enough, it plays HD DVD and Blu-ray. So I said, fantastic, I'll install this on my main computer, my Media Center PC that serves TV to my children. And, you know, it's kind of like the heartbeat of the house in so many ways. And I did that, and I went to play a movie.
Yeah,
and you get a, you know, the Universal logo appeared, and I thought, my God, this is going to work. This is incredible. And then I got the dialogue box.
Uh-oh.
And it said something to the effect of, you know, your system is failing various HD, CP compliant.
Oh, you got the copy protection.
Right. So I needed to fix some things. Now, PowerDVD gives you a tool that you can run on your system. It will examine the hardware and say, this is where you're lacking. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I was lacking in two areas, one which I could fix and one which I could not. And this is where I really blew it. One of the areas I was lacking was my ATI drivers. I needed to download the latest version of the video driver.
With built-in copy protection.
Which has this stuff built into it.
Yep.
The second one was my monitor, which is a Sony widescreen display. It's 1080p, but in its DVI connection, but it is not HDCP compliant.
That's the high def copy protection scheme. Actually, they call it content protection. Mm-hmm. That the card is supposed to sense whether that's built into the monitor, because otherwise you could hook it up to some intermediate DVI device that would record.
Exactly. So apparently the way this works in Vista is, you know, from alpha to omega, you know, in the system, as this playback occurs, every step along the way has to be compliant,
right?
Or it either just won't work, or they'll degrade the quality of the video.
Now, it didn't degrade it in your case. It just...
Well, I didn't get anything. So I got that logo, like I said, and I thought it was going to work, and then it just sort of died. And
But you did get an error saying, we can't play this?
Yes, and I got a dialogue showing me exactly what I needed to do to fix it.
Was that from Microsoft, or was that from...
Oh, no.
That was from CyberLink.
Right.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Yeah, they actually give you a tool that does this.
Ah.
Now, here's the thing. This shows you how my mind works, right? I know that two of these things are broken. One of them I cannot fix, but I decide I'm going to go fix the other one anyway, right?
Like that'll magically help.
Yeah. I don't know why.
You'll see half the movie.
Yeah, it's stupid. So I went to ATI/AMD. I went to download the latest driver, and whatever the version was on that day, I noticed it said, this version of the driver is not HDCP compliant. If you would like an HDCP compliant version of this driver, please download the previous version, which was from February. So I did that, and I installed it. And I hate installing this kind of software. You know, the Catalyst stuff and they've got the front end baloney and all right. The graphics. I hate that stuff. So against my better judgment, I installed this thing. I rebooted my computer, and it blue screened. And it blue screened. And it blue screened, and I safe mode, and you can't uninstall from safe mode, which is insane. What is the point of safe mode? And system restore didn't have a restore point for this thing. And
how frustrating.
And you know, this system has been really stable otherwise, or it was until that day. And I finally, I don't know how, but it just kind of booted into Windows normally one time for some reason. So at that point, I went and I uninstalled the ATI driver, rebooted, and blue screened. And I actually unplugged the HD DVD drive at some point, and for some reason, it actually got more stable after that, which made me a little suspicious. But along the way, I decided to get rid of the ATI stuff and abandon my quest for HD DVD on the computer. And I got the thing so that it was running, and I was just happy to have it back up and running.
Yeah.
Reduced expectations thing you get into.
Yeah. Please, just run.
I just want you to run now. Yeah, no, yeah. Forget the HD stuff.
That's okay. I'm sorry.
Record. If you could just record TV again, I promise I'll never touch your drivers again.
Step away from the high-def recorder.
Yeah. So the next day, I came back, and I was sitting in front of my computer, and I remembered. I use something called AnyDVD from SciSoft on all my computers. I love this program, and it does two things. One is it actually strips off the copy protection of DVDs. Oh. So if you want to copy them or back them up,
yeah,
it does that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's not actually what...
If these things see that stuff, they barf.
Oh, no. Actually, I'm going in a completely different direction.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. That is on there, but I didn't... Yeah, that... And who knows? Maybe that did contribute to it. I'm not sure. But the other thing it does, which I really like, and I just find this to be really annoying on DVDs today, is it lets you skip all that junk on the front of DVDs.
Oh, hallelujah.
You know? So... You put in a DVD, and you know, some DVDs today, they have 30 previews, right, of movies that are coming out.
Yeah, and you can't skip them.
No, you can't. Well, sometimes you can skip them, but you can't just skip them en masse. You know, you can't say, look, I just want to go to the menu.
Yeah.
You actually have to skip them one at a time.
Now,
which is just,
somebody told me it's worse in rented DVDs, that if you buy DVDs, you don't have the same thing. But
I have plenty of purchased DVDs where this happens. It drives me crazy.
And Disney's notorious for this.
Disney's are the absolute worst. And when you have kids, it's, you know, you've got to be kidding me. I've got children who never watch commercials, and now we rent DVDs, and they have to watch all this junk.
Right.
It's just insane. Right. So... this software gets rid of that. I love it for that.
This is any DVD?
Any DVD. And I want to say it might cost, you know, $30 probably, something along those lines.
And there's an any DVD HD.
Yes, there is. And that's what I remembered. Was one of the times I went, I downloaded, an update to any DVD one day, and I noticed they have an HD version.
Huh.
So I thought, I wonder if I can get this at a discount. Because when you buy... any DVD, just
how do they get away with this? This removes AACS encryption.
Yeah, I'm not going to get. I don't want to get into a debate about whether this is legal or not. Because
I just don't understand why they're still.
No, because I love it so much, and I don't use it for illicit purposes. To me, this is just Oh, I paid for this thing, and
they're in Ireland. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, whatever they're whatever they are, they're beautiful because you could buy any DVD or upgrade to the HD version. I want to say again, it was $30.
It is. It's $49 for any DVD, and then $30 for the option. You can get the bundle.
Okay. So I downloaded the upgrade because I've been, I paid for any DVD some time ago.
$30.
And no ATI drivers, no HDCP compliant video card. This movie came right up the first time. And in stunning HD splendor. I mean, absolutely beautiful.
Jack Valeni is spinning in his grave right now.
Which makes me really happy because I really. I'm convinced that guy is Satan. In fact, the fact that he died suggests that he's not Satan, but he's pretty damn close, right?
This is really interesting because, and I know you've been following on the May Day revolt on Dig where they, all these people did was publish a long prime number that the AACS folks say, we've got that number copyrighted and you can't do that. Here's a product. Forget the number here, forget the hacking tools. Here's a product that does it. For sale with a Visa or a MasterCard.
Yep. It's the greatest. Yeah, it's one of the greatest pieces of software ever. I love it.
My suggestion, buy it now.
Well, you still can.
Before this podcast comes out.
Right. It is. I often wonder about that stuff. But,
SlySoft.
Again, I'm not sitting here backing up my DVD collection. I mean, I do.
This is just so you can play the thing on your HD DVD player.
God forbid I play this on one of the nicest screens in my house,
Heaven help us, this is fantastic. So it would allow you to make a copy, which I think is
I don't know, does it?
Clone DVD, although it doesn't necessarily, I don't know about cloning HD DVD.
I mean, how big could an HD movie be? It must be humongous. I can't even imagine the horsepower needed.
You have a Blu-ray burner or an HD DVD burner, there's no point. And you're not putting this up on a BitTorrent site to download. There's plenty of laws to prosecute that.
Sure. No, this is personal use. It's a movie that I bought using hardware that I bought, playing on a screen that I bought.
All you want to do is play the movie.
I realize this is a big request, but I was wondering if I could put these things together enjoy a movie.
Please, sir, may I play your movie?
Wow.
Right.
Wow. The fact that you have to buy a $30 product to get rid of the copy protection just so you can play it.
Well, it's better than spending $1,000 on an HDCP compliant display.
Well, that's the other thing that blows my mind is that this stuff doesn't work very well because here's this $30 program that turns it off.
Right.
That's widely
available. And let me tell you, absolutely beautiful. I mean,
does it look good?
It's fantastic.
I'm a fan of HD DVDs. Believe me, I think it looks.
And I really wasn't. I had this thing on what I thought was a decent screen, but putting it in here, I actually called my wife and I said, I know you don't care, but look at this thing. It's incredible. And she said,
because you have a nice computer. What you have a Sony, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And it's 20. It's a wide, one of those wide.
Yeah, 1920 by 1200, whatever.
Perfect. So you're watching 1080. Well, I don't know about the HD DVD, but you could watch 1080p on it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you, SlySoft.
I think it's great stuff. So,
and you didn't, you're not taking money out of anybody's pocket here. You really?
No, spent thousands of dollars a year on it. I'm not.
Speaking of profits, we talked last week about how Microsoft made billions of dollars, almost $5 billion last quarter, and you've got some numbers to put that in perspective.
Yeah, I had written something that week after we talked in short takes comparing, Apple and Microsoft and what the differences were and how everyone went, gaga over Apple. But look what Microsoft's doing. It's incredible. And sure enough, as per my prediction, Microsoft's stock rocketed all the way from $29 to $30, just went absolutely nowhere once again. But that's what happens. But after Friday, it was after Friday, somebody from Seeking Alpha, one of the financial analysts on this interesting site, put Microsoft's earnings in perspective. So they said, for example, it took Microsoft only 10 hours of business in the quarter to exceed the amount of money that Red Hat made in the entire quarter. So he has figures like that.
Wow.
So for example, they make in 4 days what Research and Motion makes in the entire quarter, the people that make the BlackBerry.
Wow.
It takes them 4 days to exceed Starbucks income for the entire quarter. 2 weeks to exceed McDonald's quarterly income. 2 weeks to exceed Apple's quarterly net income. 18 days to exceed Google.
Wow, 23. That tells you something.
Yep, 23 days to exceed Coke, and 10 weeks to exceed Walmart. You know, and as we had mentioned, you know, someone was referring to Microsoft as a dead company. He says, yeah. For a dead company, Microsoft is certainly looking pretty lively.
Now, does this go back after, you know, I mean, there's this initial rush of people buying Office 2007 and Vista. Mm-hmm. Does this kind of go back to normal?
No, that's the interesting thing. So Microsoft, you know, as a financial or a publicly held company, gives guidance on the coming quarter during during the earnings period. When they announce the earnings, they have a phone call with analysts and so forth. And they actually looked ahead at the next quarter, and it's not going to be quite this good, but it's going to be somewhere in the, $13 billion range or whatever for revenues, which is pretty close. Mm-hmm. So it's still, they're still rocketing along. You know, the other thing that it's interesting, and I didn't think to do this either. I like this little bit of information. These people at Microsoft, they make $55 million in profit every day.
Every day.
$55 million every single day.
That's why if Bill Gates, you know, drops a $1,000 bill, it's not worth his time to bend over and pick it up.
Right.
Because he's going to make more money if he just keeps on walking.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
That's amazing. Now, Bill doesn't get all of that, but he gets a good amount of it.
I'm sure he's okay.
He gets a good proportion. I mean, I guess in the stock price is where he gets his money. And if since the stock price doesn't reflect this as well.
Right. And that's just absolutely, you know, like as we said, I mean.
Crazy.
No explanation for that.
Crazy. Yeah. Windows, Vista came out. They pointed mm-hmm. out there, besides the fact that there are 14 different versions or whatever it is,
right.
They all come on the DVD. And at any yep. time, you push a button and you can get any other version upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done that now. Yes?
I've done that now?
Have you?
No, I've done something different.
Oh, I thought you did the Windows.
I've done that too. I mean,
anytime?
Anytime upgrade. So Windows anytime upgrade.
Yeah.
In the same way that there are 14 different versions of Windows, there are actually, you know, 14 different ways you can buy the thing as well. I mean, it's really kind of interesting if you compare XP to Vista, they've really extended the number of ways in which you can acquire Windows now. It's pretty dramatic. So,
but so you're talking about the upgrade coupon then?
No, this is different. This is actually an electronic upgrade. So if you get Windows Vista Home Basic, Home Premium, mm-hmm. or Business, mm-hmm. either at retail or with a new computer, you can upgrade electronically to other versions of Vista for less money than if you went into the store and bought the retail upgrade, you know, version.
But that's not Windows Anytime. That's something else.
No, this is Windows Anytime.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. Great. So it's a software application.
I'll
run
just
it.
Get out of the way here. I'll just sit back, take over the show, will you? Because I'm.
Well, let's start with the basics. You know what the Windows is, right?
Yeah. Windows. Yeah. I heard about it.
Okay. This is something for Windows. No, it's. It is, by the way, don't feel bad about this because it's confusing. I mean, I had written a goof article, a few months ago now where it was sort of, you know, having fun purchasing Windows Vista. And I listed all the ways that you could spend money on Vista if you wanted to. And it is insane. I mean, and keeping track of this stuff in your head is not easy. There's no doubt about it. In fact, I had to go back, and if this makes you feel any better, consider this. I went back to my own articles and said, I must have written something about this. I must have already written an article.
Yeah.
And I searched and I searched and I searched and I couldn't find it. And so this week I decided to do it and to write an article because I thought I had written about it. I thought I had covered this, but I had only covered it in sort of cursory fashion in, you know, my review, or I mentioned it in some other article, but I never really wrote about the process.
Right.
And so I'm kind of glad I went through it because there is a one little gotcha in there that, it's sort of a UI thing that I just really threw me for a loop, which is kind of silly in retrospect. But at the time, I was really concerned that I couldn't get it to work. But I think the couple of things you need to understand about it is, one, you can purchase this thing online, and what you're buying is a license, you know.
Because you already have it on the disk.
Yeah, and it's sort of strange because I did it. I have a PC that I'm reviewing that came with Windows Vista Business, so I thought, well, I'll upgrade this thing, you know, to Ultimate, and the cost of doing it via this program is $139, and for $139, what you get is literally a single file, it's teeny,
which
it's
is
like
just
a little
license.
Yeah, you could delete it by sneezing, you know, and it's the same feeling I got when I bought my wife's wedding ring years and years ago.
Yeah.
Are you holding this little thing thinking, oh my God, what did I spend all this money on? And obviously, hopefully my wife's ring was a little more than $139, but it was, I was poor. The point is, this is still a lot of money. And, you know, depending on what version you're going from and to, the costs are different, but they're always less money than buying the retail package. So it is worth doing this, assuming you can kind of handle the notion that you're buying this thing electronically. So depending on what you're doing, it's $79 all the way up to $199, depending on the versions. You download a file, you know, it's kind of strange, but.
And then you have to put your Vista disk in, right?
That's the trick. And here's the thing. They really go out of their way to tell you, you need to have a Vista Anytime upgrade disk. You know, your PC maker should have given you one. Look for this logo, you know?
Right.
Now, the review laptop I had did not include such a disk, but of course, I have Vista disks all over the place. So, you know, what could go wrong? So, I'm popping these disks in, and it's not doing anything. And I don't understand, you know, I'm looking at this, I'm rereading it, and I'm saying, well, it says, you know, it says, you know, look for the screen that says install now.
Yeah.
And of course, in Windows, what you get when you install it, when you put in a disk, you get that auto run window. And the auto run window does not say install now. It says, you know, run setup.exe. And I'm thinking this thing is going to trigger something automatically that I'm not going to have to.
I would assume that too. You know.
Well, think about what it's doing. I mean, it's going to eventually sort of fake out setup in a way. You know, you don't get a setup key. You don't get a product key.
Right.
You know, so I'm thinking it's gonna do something special to make this work in a different way. And I keep waiting for this special thing to happen. And then I'm thinking to myself, I might not have the disk I need. What if this is a special kind of disk? You know? So as it turns out,
specific to that computer, you mean?
Yeah, or is specific to this process. You know, maybe there really is something special called a Windows Anytime Upgrade Disk. You know, maybe it's a special version of the Vista DVD. I don't know. You know, I've never done this before.
Right.
So I went and created restore DVDs using the tools on the hard drive to see if that worked. And no, that didn't work. And
oh dear.
They allow you to order a disk from them for shipping and handling. Uh-huh. And I actually went through the process of ordering that disk. But then I was looking at the dialogue and I'm thinking to myself, install now. You know, it says install now on that main Windows Vista setup screen. I wonder if that's what they're talking about. So I clicked through the run once dialogue, went to the next window, and sure enough, it said install now. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is what they meant, but they just didn't, you know, they didn't explain it very clearly.
Right.
So actually what you have to do is manually run setup while this file is running on your system.
Oh, you can't. And if you did it any other time, it wouldn't know.
It wouldn't know. But when you do it that way, what happens is
very
it skips.
Clear. That's not
clear. I don't like, And I'm thinking, you know, I'm fairly savvy with computers, and to me, this was actually confusing.
Yeah.
And you know what this reminds me of? I don't know if we talked about this in the podcast, but I have a Volkswagen, and this thing is like 6.5 years old now. It's getting up there, but it had a CD changer in it. Mm-hmm. And you would put a disc in the back. You'd have to open the trunk, put the disc in, go around the front of the car, and then the little screen on the thing would say, CHK disc. And I thought it meant check disk.
Yeah.
Like something was
check
disk.
Yeah.
So I'd run back out and I'd eject it and I'd put it back in a different slot and I'd screw around with it and eventually it would work. I swear to God, 3 or 4 years into owning this vehicle, one day I went out and put a disk. I got check disk and I said, you know what? Screw this. I don't have time for this. So I have to go wherever I'm going. I close the trunk. I get in the car and all of a sudden the thing starts playing. And then I'm like, wait a minute. You know what it was saying?
What?
It was saying checking disk.
Checking disc.
Not checked it. It was like a UI problem. You know, it was
big a UI problem.
But for 3 years, I was convinced this thing was broken. It was me. So this was like that. You know, even though it was telling me the right thing, sort of. I wasn't, you know, yeah. So a little bit of dyslexia. But
you know, I'm really glad you mentioned this, because I know I will start getting phone calls now from people who say, well, I bought the thing, what do I, and nothing's happened. Because I would totally expect, like you, that it would trigger something.
Right. And
or
it doesn't.
It would see the disk and say, aha.
It does change something, because when you run setup and you choose upgrade, you know, it doesn't prompt you for a product key. You just upgrade. And, you know, upgrading Vista, it's funny. It's the exact opposite of installing. When you install Vista, it's minimum number of reboots. It happens very quickly. You know, on a very fast system, it could take 20 minutes.
Right.
When you upgrade a system, it doesn't matter what kind of computer you have. It takes forever. Oh, this thing took an hour and a half. It was horrific. It rebooted several times, you know. But what's interesting is when it's done, everything is the way it was. You know, you have Ultimate Edition installed instead of Business, and you can go to activate it, or you can wait until it automatically activates, and it activates just fine. You know, it works. So I guess the key is, you know, in the future, if you have to restore the system, obviously you have to hold on to this file. And unfortunately, you're going to have to restore the system to Business and then do this hackneyed upgrade thing yet again. So hopefully that doesn't happen too often.
But that is a pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the initial install is an image, and this is one of the innovations they did with Vista. It's an image restore, so it's very quick. But then we're back to the old
setup. Is yeah,
yeah, the initial setup. But now we're back to the old
upgrade
way.
Not so quick.
Oh, that's not too bad.
But it works, you know, and it doesn't seem to have suffered any ill effects or anything. So, you know, all the applications were running fine. I made sure I installed some stuff on there, and as you would expect, you know, going from Vista to Vista, why wouldn't that work? But that little thing, you know, it's just, you know, I can't even tell you how many. I dug out all these disks. You know, maybe this one will work. You know, maybe this one will work.
You've had a rotten week.
I break things.
You've not had a good week.
This I just make mistakes.
This has been a week where Paul has just been banging his head against the computer.
Ever since I got back from Denver, everything's gone.
It's all been downhill. Yeah. I blame Denver.
I do, too. Well, I blame the people at the magazine, but.
No.
Actually, those guys were in town last night. They did their show in Boston, and I didn't go to that show, but I did meet them for dinner. And you know, we laughed and we cried.
Laughed.
I cried. But yeah.
Silverlight. We talked about this a little while ago. This is Microsoft's kind of, sort of, entree into the QuickTime Flash player realm.
Right.
And do you have some more information on it now?
Well, yeah, you know, when they first presented this a few weeks back, you know, it was a browser plugin. It was a way to do animation and video. And, you know, it will work on Firefox and Safari, and it will run on the Mac and on Windows. And it, you know, whatever, you know, another version of Flash, just what everyone was asking for. But actually, you know, this past week they had their Mix07 conference, which is their web developer conference. And they really talked up Silverlight, but they also talked about some of the stuff they hadn't revealed before, which is, you know, the 1.0 version is what they described before. It's a browser plugin. But the 1.1 version, which is also now available in an alpha version, is actually basically a container for all of their .NET programming libraries. And it's a self-contained version of .NET. So it's sort of a cross-platform .NET-y thing. And it's, you know... something that will allow developers to create really sophisticated applications, and they
so
showed
it's
some
really more like Adobe's Apollo.
Yeah, yeah, it's a much deeper and richer product than they had alluded to previously.
Basically, cross-platform .NET. That now, see, that would be great, because I think a lot of there's a lot of neat .NET stuff coming out, but it's Windows only.
Right,
be nice to see it cross-platform. That's great.
So one of the things that people had asked them was, well, are you going to do a Linux version of this? And they said, well, not right now. You know, Linux desktop applications like this are not particularly interesting. But the folks who are doing Mono.
Which is the .NET open source port.
Right, for Linux, are going to release a version of Silverlight for Linux by the end of this year. So actually, that's going to be how that happens.
So it's open enough that they can duplicate it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's
I guess, well, they already have the CLR stuff from .NET running on Linux through Mono, so apparently it's not that big of a jump to do this.
That's great.
And the other thing, it is. It's interesting. So, you know, they're opening it up to languages that aren't necessarily Microsoft friendly historically. Things like, you know, JavaScript, Ruby, Python.
Wow.
Interesting. So, I guess we'll see. But maybe it's not the laughing stock, you know, that I said it was. But
no, in fact, it could be the Rosetta Stone. I mean, if it has Python bindings and you could write code that calls Silverlight on all these different platforms, mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of thing that you might see developers jumping on and saying, wow. Because, I mean, sure. I'm seeing stuff, I mean, really beautiful stuff being done with .NET.
I mean, this reminds me of years and years ago when Internet Explorer 2 was still the modern version. They had a big show where they showed off an alpha version of IE3, and it was going to do all these great things. And you get really pumped up when you go to these Microsoft shows. They show you how everything's going to work, and then you actually go home and download the code, and you try to make it work, and nothing works, and your system crashes. And I haven't done that. Actually, I have done that with Silverlight because I was so inspired by this that I went and spent hours and hours downloading the next version of Visual Studio, which promptly would not install on my system. For no apparent reason, and I just deleted the files.
You're just jinxed this
week. I'm doomed, is what I am. I'm like the black hole where technology goes to die.
My suggestion, as soon as you finish this, go to bed. Just go to bed.
It's okay. It's okay.
Put on,
this is just the way it is.
Put Casino Royale on the HD DVD.
Yeah.
You know, get Gears of War ready, Call of Duty 3, and just go to bed.
See, I actually wish I could do that, but you know what else? You know what I have to do tonight?
What?
I have to go to my son's baseball game again. And let me tell you something.
How was it last week?
It was terrible. And since the last time we talked, I have been to three of these games. And if there's a commonality to all of them, it is that it has always been cold and rainy.
Yeah.
And the food was terrible.
Yep.
And the game was terrible. Yep. And like parents are yelling at each other. And it's just me cringing up in these bleachers.
I always bring a few gadgets, you know, bring a pocket PC.
Yeah, well, so I brought a laptop to one and then it rained.
Oh, great.
You know, I'm browsing the web on my stupid little mobile phone thing and, the battery dies in 10 seconds because you're browsing.
And, of course, your kid looks up. He's on first base and you're looking at the computer. It's not good.
We always get the look.
Yeah, the look. Dad, anytime. You weren't watching.
Oh, no, but I watch when he's playing. You know, and I
watch when my son's playing. Exactly.
Yeah, which is, you know, out of 2 hours that you're there is maybe 10 minutes or something. It's painful.
Yeah.
It's just painful.
Yeah.
So
I share that with you. Hey, speaking of Internet Explorer, IE8 now, we've got some preview or some information or something. I've seen stories about IE8. What is Microsoft telling us?
Nothing.
There you go, right there. That's the story
you've seen. That's the problem. You know, they are working on it, right? Well, they are working on it. That's what they say. 2 years ago, they announced that they would release IE7 for XP and Windows Server. When previous to that, we knew IE7 was going to be part of Windows Vista. Since then, they've shipped IE7, and it's gotten good reviews. It's doing well, et cetera. Certainly, given the 5-year wait between IE6 and IE7, we had high hopes that they would kind of continue on this path. And when IE7 shipped, they said the next version would come in a year, maybe a year and a half. Now they're saying it's going to be maybe 2 years. They don't want to talk about it. Some of the guys I know at Microsoft told me that basically they decided that they were going to focus on Silverlight at this show, and because they knew that if they did anything about IE at this early stage, it would sort of take the spotlight away from Silverlight.
Right.
But, you know, what they've effectively done is, you know, there are a lot of web designers out there who want to know what's going on, and they want to look ahead and be able to get ready for this thing, and there are a lot of questions out there, and IE still in some ways dominated the headlines because, you know, people want to know what are we doing here? You know, what are you going to do? Are you going to be more standards compliant? Are you going to, you know, better compatibility with CES? Are you going to get rid of the, you know, that quirks mode stuff? I mean, what are you going to do? And they're not saying, so.
Not saying.
I don't know. So I'm hoping I could goad them into a response.
Do we know when it would be?
When it would ship?
Yeah.
It could be 2 years from when IE7 shipped in October 2006. So it could be as late 2008.
So you just don't know?
No, we don't know.
There's just no way to know.
Nope.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I wish they'd tell us more. But, you know, we just got IE7. I'm not dying on that one. I'm not going to beat my head against that one.
I guess my only concern there is I'm not concerned about major features, right? I don't, They have tab browsing. You know, the printing is fantastic. Right, that stuff works fine. But I think that when you talk about web standards, there needs to be an ongoing effort to at least offer that stuff as an option. You know, the way IE7 works right now is very complicated in some ways because they have to support the old IE stuff because so many sites and web applications rely on that. But they also are trying to make these stabs at, you know, web standards compliance. So I'd sort of like to see them take more measured steps and over time release interim versions of IE that maybe wouldn't be distributed as far and wide, but, you know, made a better attempt at adhering to important web standards and so forth. So
it would be helpful, certainly for web developers.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, Paul, we're going to wrap this up. Unless you have any other, you know, fiascos you'd like to share with us.
No.
That'll be all. All right, get back in bed. After the ballgame. You know, what I do is I bring a nice comfy pillow to sit on because the bleachers are awful, and a big blanket to get under and just pretend I'm in bed watching a high-def Little League game.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
There you go.
It's going to a blanket and
bring your own hot dogs.
Yeah. Maybe I'll grill or something.
Yeah, grill. There you go. Great to talk to you. I want to remind everybody, of course, to check out Engage, thebestwaytostart.com, the ultimate start button for XP and Vista. And to buy Paul's book, Vista Secrets, available in bookstores everywhere, is the book if you want to.
Oh, and we should talk about one more thing. I'm sorry.
Yes, what?
I always do this. Well, we need to figure out a talk show thing maybe for next week.
Let's do it next week. Because I forgot that we were doing Mod 4 talk shoes, and this is episode 24, so we should have done it this week. So I'll tell you what, we'll set it up for next week. Okay. We generally record this the day before the podcast comes out. So look for us live, and you can participate. We'll take questions at talkshoe.com. It'll be 4 p.m. Eastern time on the Thursday, the 10th of May. May 10th, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Which makes it 20 hours Greenwich Mean Time. And that'll be fun. I look forward to that. I enjoy taking the questions. I know you don't.
No, I do. I actually, what I'd like to see is some kind of, you know, bigger discussions. I want to talk about trends and, you know, what people care about and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So hopefully we'll have some.
I try to do that every week on the radio show. And basically all anybody wants to know is how to install Windows and get it networking and print.
You're like the Ask Beth of computers.
I am. Well, I want to talk about issues. I really do. And every show, for instance, this weekend, I'll be bringing up that Dig story and everything and talking about the notion of, is it, you know, are our copyright laws fair or have they gone too far? Can you copyright a number? What does that mean? And the first call I'll get will be, I've got Norton Internet Security installed, and I can't network my computers. But that's all right. That's what people want. That's why I do talk radio, because frankly, you know what people are interested in. It isn't always what I want them to talk about. Unfortunately. Hey, Paul, great to talk to you. Always fascinating.
You too.
And everybody should go to your site, winsupersite.com. That's the super site for Windows, or internet-nexus.com. That's Paul's blog. And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.